On this episode of Course Agility, my guest is Heather Eckenrode from Pennsylvania. My guest today on Off Course Agility is Heather Eckenrode. And you are from Pennsylvania. That's the general area you're from, correct? Welcome to the podcast.
That is correct. Thank you. Very happy to be here. I am located just outside of Philadelphia.
Okay. I always like to get at least the general area of where my guests are from. And I must say, this is an unusual, this is a first time situation here. I have just seen you at not one, but two agility trials recently. So I actually have had an interaction with you and your dogs, which is amazing because that's a first in a long time.
Yeah, and isn't that great to say? I mean, I feel like we've been kind of waiting for life to come in this direction for a while.
That's right. It just feels good to actually be out and about again and doing something somewhat normal after, you know, months of working at home, which I probably will still do for a while, but, and, you know, masking everywhere you go and stuff like that. So it's good to have a little bit of normalcy again.
Definitely.
All right, as I do with everyone, I'm going to ask, how did you get involved with agility? How did you discover it?
It's actually kind of crazy. I really wanted a dog, and after we bought a house, I kept asking my husband over and over, like every day for like a whole year, is it time to get a dog, right? We finally agreed on it. We got a dog. I did some basic training at first. And so we didn't actually start in agility until my dogs were a little older because I didn't know about it. And actually, a coworker put a coupon from the paper on my desk. And she said, this is for this, like, dog gym. I think you would like to do this. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And I looked at that coupon. I looked at their website and for a couple of months, and it actually expired before I actually kind of got up the nerve to actually investigate what the place was and really start going there. And I'm so thankful that she did because it's led us on quite a journey. I think my dog, Bradshaw, was about 3 years old before we actually took our first agility class.
Okay, so you didn't do it right from the beginning. It was something you found. That's kind of what happened with me and my first dog, Dino. And where was what was that coupon for? Was it for a club or a school or?
Yeah, it was a $10 off of like a 7 week class kind of situation. So it was good for any. They had all kinds of different dog sports there. But the one that caught my eye was agility.
Right. Yeah. that's how you actually found it through kind of like a coworker who let you in on it. And that yes. Doesn't sound like that person actually knew much about it either.
She did not either. But you know what? Later on, after she retired, she actually ended up with two corgis and did take some classes there as well. So, but that was probably about 7 years after she kind of introduced me to it. So clearly it was on her mind as something that would be really fun to do. And I was glad to see that eventually she joined in on it.
Right. So then I assume you went to the school and at some point you got serious about it.
I think I was hooked on the first class. Mm-hmm. It's funny how an instructor and the kind of feedback they give you can really impact the direction that you go. But what I saw, Bradshaw went in that first little 3 foot tunnel and he came out with purpose. Like he was confident. He knew what he was doing it to earn the treat at the end. Then we did a little exercise and the instructor said, wow, he has really great hind end awareness. And I had no idea what that meant, but the way that she said it to me and the look on Bradshaw's face and like it just felt great. And I took it as a great compliment and, you know, later on realized what it meant. But as soon as she said that, and I saw his face coming out of that little 3-foot tunnel, I knew this was something that he was going to want to continue.
Right. So you saw that he was having fun, and that made you want to continue doing it too.
Absolutely. He just this little confidence in his the little swagger after that that class was pretty fun to see.
Now I do know you and I know your dogs, but what kind of dogs is Bradshaw, and what kind of dogs do you kind of favor?
Yeah, so I like little shaggy ones with floppy ears. So my guys are all poodle cocker spaniel mixes. So I actually have 3 right now, 2 that compete in agility and 1 that's a puppy.
Right. Okay. And because I know this now, just recently I learned, your dogs actually are Bradshaw, Rooney, and Franco. And you have a naming theme there. These are names associated with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
We do. I like to think of that as like merging of hobbies. Right, we've got my husband and I are from the Pittsburgh area, and so we are very big Steelers fans. And we do have competing Sunday activities in the fall when we're trying to work out agility schedules and watching the games. So definitely a merging of hobbies there with the names.
Right. I'm always curious how people name their dogs, but when I realized, because I didn't, I've known you and your dogs for a number of years, but I never realized Bradshaw was named after Terry Bradshaw until just recently, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it was funny when I named him, and living in the Philadelphia area, not as many people like got the connection. And at first, everyone was asking me if I named him after Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City.
Okay.
And I said, no, he's not named after a TV character. He's named after a football player.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. So I assume then you trained with Bradshaw, and then at some point you started doing agility trials. And what... I guess I'll ask, what venues do you trial in or at?
I do a little bit of everything. So I started in NADAC. One of my classmates did a lot of NADAC, and so he convinced me to go to a trial. So I started in NADAC. And I'm really lucky in the Philadelphia area because we have access to a lot of trials. On any particular weekend, I can pretty much drive in a different direction and in a very reasonable period of time, probably under an hour, go to a trial of 4 or 5 different organizations. So there's just a lot of trials in the area. So I have done a lot of what is local. The club that I was taking classes at held a lot of UKI, which is a little bit funny because, right, the skill set used in UKI is very different than the skill set used in NADAC. So it was kind of like the 2 main ones that I started with were kind of the bookends in terms of the types of courses that you see, right, running an extension a lot in NADAC and then running a lot of short, fast runs with a lot of collection in UKI. So kind of crazy, kind of those were the 2 that they're like my classmates were doing a lot of, and that kind of influenced where it started. After doing that, I did pick up and run in a lot of other organizations as well. At the time, there was some DACNA in the area. I dabbled in USDAA, but their jump heights at the time weren't consistent with some of the other organizations. So I did a few of those, went to 1 regional tournament, but didn't run consistently in there. And we've done a lot of CPE as well. It wasn't one of the original ones we picked up with, but we have done a lot of CPE also.
Okay.
And we've done a little bit of ASCA also. If there's an ASCA in the area, there's one place that we can do that.
Wow.
We've also done that.
Okay. So you definitely you've done a lot of different venues, that's for sure. Way more than I, who've pretty much only ever done NADAC. And I'll just ask. Which one do you have a preference, or they all have appeal to you?
I think they all do because it's a different set of skills for each one. I will say running in many different organizations, it does make it hard to reach some of the higher level goals in terms of titling. So we have high level titles in a lot of different organizations, but we don't have, multiples of those, right? Some folks, you see folks that do NADAC consistently and they get, multiple NATCHs. We actually don't have a NATCH yet, so we still need some of those elite chances cues. But we do have a CATE, which would be that something similar to that in CPE. And then in UKI, which we've done the most of, Bradshaw has, their title is called IAC, International Agility Champion, and he's got, I stopped actually counting just because that's not important to me, right? The important part to me is having fun during that day, so I don't spend a lot of time kind of mining the data. But he's probably at like 10 or 11 of their IACs.
Okay. Did you say that's CPE or
that one's UKI.
That's UKI. Okay. That's UKI. Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that one before, the international. Okay.
And I'm talking a lot about Bradshaw, but I do have my other little awesome guy, Rooney. And I think one of the things that I really like for him is NADAC brought intro in right around the time that we were having some like motivation issues. And I really felt like they designed it just for Rooney, right? It was that chance for the two of us to get out there, do a course, like handle all of the stresses of a trial, which really affects him, and go out there and do a short course and come off feeling good about it, right? Not a lot of handling moves, not a lot of, I didn't have to put a lot of pressure on him, right? We could run together and have fun on this nice short, pretty straightforward course. So I love that about NADAC. I love that I feel like I can go there and get challenges and courses that feel good with both Bradshaw and Rooney.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And the introduction of intro in NADAC, I think, has been a really good thing for a lot of dogs. And it gives you a choice. With my guy, Trace, my new guy, I'm at a point now where I'm trying to decide, do I want to stay in intro or do I want to, because I really didn't get that many intro things. It's all because of the pandemic thing, where I feel like I've missed a year, or do I want to try to go to novice? Because in some ways I like the challenges that you see in novice. And in intro, like, there's no discriminations generally. So you miss that, but then that short course ability is so nice, especially in regular where there's no weave poles too. That is a real advantage in the intro regular.
Definitely. Like I said, the timing of that was just absolutely perfect. Like I'm saying, I think somebody brought this in just for us.
Well, I'm glad they did.
Me too, because we're still having fun. And they're getting older, and I like NADAC's flexibility of being able to run kind of whichever level that you would like to, whatever makes sense for where you are in your journey on that particular weekend.
Right, and I have seen that too, where older dogs sometimes the person wants to still have some fun with their older dog, but they don't want that long course and all that anymore. And they put the older guy or, gal, whatever, the older dog in intro to have a little fun while they're at the trial with that dog too. And that's always cool to see also.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things, since I've run, in the two bookends, at least in my opinion, in terms of style, is I've got to learn a lot from watching a lot of different types of handling and a lot of different types of connection with your dog. And I just feel in terms of like a learning journey about agility, that having run in both of those, it's been really helpful for me to to kind of see both ends of the spectrum.
Right. All right. Now, I'm not sure how I want to go here. I think I'm going to go to the high, the more of the success level for a minute, because I know you have gone to NADAC Champs, and you, I know, yeah. I believe you mentioned you've gone to the CPE Nationals. Have you gone to other organizations like events too?
Yes. So we have gone to, we did NADAC Champs in 2017, and we did CPE, their national event, in 2016 and 2018. Those were all in Ohio, so kind of convenient being from Pennsylvania. But our bigger trips have been, we have gone south for the UKI US Open, and we've Bradshaw has competed there six times, starting in 2014. And I actually have run Rooney there as well. Their event is an open, so certain events, any dog can decide to go and run. So there were a couple of times where there were events where maybe I didn't enter Bradshaw, or Bradshaw was already qualified to run in kind of the second round. But I entered Rooney just to give him a chance to kind of work on some trial stress and maybe a different environment and go in and just have fun while we were on a trip. So he's run in a couple of the opens in just some basic jumping things or some simple runs that we did. So we've had a lot of fun and quite a lot of success. I always like to think, you know, Bradshaw has taught me a lot about being extremely technical and precise with handling because he's just my little champ, and he does really well under pressure. And so I've learned a lot about competition and winning with him. But with Rooney, I've learned a lot more about teamwork and, you know, reading your dog and, you know, doing what your dog needs to run the course successfully. Okay, some days we aren't super motivated, and that's okay. You know, we're just there to have fun. So trying to find, to focus on that part of agility, that this is about teamwork with my dog and about having a lot of fun. And so I've learned a lot of that with Rooney. You won't be surprised to see me at a trial running the outside of a tunnel. He tends to be more motivated if when I run a little more, so a lot of times I will run the outside with him. But it's been interesting being on the journey with two dogs at the same time because they are only 6 months apart in age, and they started kind of one agility session apart from one another. So they've been doing it about the same time, but they've kind of gotten to two very different places. But Bradshaw has taken us on quite a journey.
Right. So Bradshaw in some ways has done well, but Rooney has given you satisfaction in overcoming challenges.
Absolutely. I enjoy my runs with him, and some of the things that he's accomplished, I have been equally as proud of as Bradshaw, you know, winning at these big events.
Right. And Bradshaw has won, right? He won at, what did you say? Tell me he won,
yes,
at CPE.
He's actually won a couple different awards. So at NADAC Champs, we were the dog who fell right below the line for finals.
Okay. Which is pretty impressive,
Yeah, I knew going into the last round that we had the last spot, and we bypassed the hoop and didn't end up making the cut then for the finals. So, but at CPE, he did win a Games Award, a High-End Standard Award. They have some different awards that they do. But probably his biggest event, he's been on the podium five times at UKI events down at the Open over the years. But in 2018, he actually won the 12-inch Select Speed Stakes class. And Speed Stakes, in my mind, is probably the most similar event they have to NADAC. It's jumps and tunnels. And at these big events, the courses tend to be a little bigger. So, like, you're really running hard in between the jumps. So, to me, it was kind of special because the Speed Stakes kind of feels a lot like a NADAC run. But it's There is some different handling requirements within the course, though. But we got to stand on top of the podium for that one, and it was just unbelievable, kind of one of those moments of a lifetime experiences.
Right. Yeah. It must be really cool to do that well after all the years of training and all the years of trials, I'm impressed that you've gone to so many different organizations and just to remember all the rules and all the different types of courses that you're running in all those different organizations. But I do understand it to a certain extent where, you know, if you're located in a location where you have trials available, but they may not all be of the one venue. I know in New Jersey, there are different trial organizations that you can definitely go to, but for NADAC, it's a bit of a desert in some ways because you have to travel so far to go to a NADAC trial in New Jersey.
Yeah, I really do wish if there was more in the area, I definitely would do more NADAC if I had access to it. And I understand there are trials I can drive to 2, 3, 4 hours away. So I have, like, and I realize out west, right, folks travel like that all the time. But here, right, it's this balancing game of knowing what's available and how far things are. And I do wish that there was more NADAC in the area.
Right. I understand that. And I bring that up a bit because, I mean, I remember when I first started trialing, there were two or three Pennsylvania clubs that, you know, they would do some of the other venues, but they also did have one or two NADAC trials. And then over the years, most of those clubs just seemed to drop the NADAC trial. I don't know if it was back when maybe NADAC, I think some of them may have dropped out when NADAC got rid of the teeter. You know, there may have been reasons why they no longer wanted to do or host NADAC, but I do remember that. And now, and Pennsylvania's a big state. There is very few NADAC trials in Pennsylvania, but I'm glad that the other venues are available to people in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there's always a great one in January up in State College. I know a lot of folks from the area like to go up and support that one. And I have also been out to a B&D Creekside Activity Center in the Pittsburgh area. I think I did one a long time ago and then maybe one two Decembers ago, maybe.
Right. Okay.
It's not a regular thing. I was driving out there to like support it, hoping that like more folks would go, right? It's kind of hard when there aren't a lot of folks working on titles in the area because there's not a lot of trials. So the more you can support it, the better.
Yeah, I understand. Understand what you're saying. That's for sure. All right. So I'll ask this question. That I've seen you at some trials over the years, and I know I think it's been Rooney. Rooney sometimes is challenged in the sense that occasionally you have to be careful of that evil having an issue in the ring, you know, doing a...
Yes, and actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to share a story with you of my first demo that I ever did that I think will probably set the tone for where you're going with those thoughts. So it's actually, Bradshaw that, will occasionally have a bathroom issue in the ring. And when we did his first demo, so this was before I did any trials, we had just learned how to really weave, and the club that I was training at, they had an event. It was at like a local outdoor show that happened to be inside in like one of those like a mega church. So there was like a lot of space with a lot of vendors, and the club that I was training with, they had a table there representing their business, and they had in the auditorium they had a little agility ring set up, And so the club said, anyone who wants to come for some experience doing agility in public, come on out with us. It'll be a great day. We're going to do four different, like, 10-minute shows or 15-minute shows throughout the day. So you can come. It's free. You're supporting us. So we really appreciate it if we had some dogs there to kind of advertise for our booth. So I got there right as it was starting. So I wasn't really planning on going out. My plan was I wanted to watch one first, get over the nerves of being at my first event, and then see how it goes and jump in on the next one. So a couple of dogs went, and Bradshaw, I had a little crate backstage, and we were waiting. And I heard his name called. It was, next up, we'll have Bradshaw. And I was like, okay. So I went, I got him out, and I took him out on stage, and there was easily over 100 people in the audience. This is one of those really large auditoriums. And on the sides of the stage, they had these two giant screens, like 20-foot screens, and there was a videographer in the balcony. And so they were zooming in on the dogs running around the stage, and so that the audience could really see what they were doing. And it was a really, really nice setup for advertising agility. And so Bradshaw gets out there, and we go, there's just a little loop with like a tunnel, a couple of jumps, and some weave poles, a set of six. And we went around the loop three times. And the third time, he went to the front of the stage, turned around, and pooped.
Oh.
The crowd went wild. The kids were like this was the best event ever.
I feel for you, but this is a very funny story.
You can't.
Not for you, though.
Yes. And I just looked at him, and I looked up, and the videographer had zoomed in so close to his pooping dog. And I looked up at the screen, and I was like, oh, my gosh, a 20-foot pooping dog on the screen. And I was just like, okay, all right. Well, so clearly, before I go to a trial, I clearly need to learn how to manage these bathroom issues, I was completely embarrassed. And then I thought, okay, well,
I can't imagine a worse thing than that. I'm amazed you ever went to a trial after that.
I know, for a first experience, I was just like, wow, okay, but now I guess the bar has been set pretty low. So, like, we only can go up from here. Like, this is like, the thing that I was, like, so afraid of happening. And it happened. And the rest of the day, when people would see Bradshaw, they were like, hey, there's that pooping dog. I was like, oh, that's not what I want to be famous for. But it happened, and it happens. And, you know, when I talk to other people who are new and are nervous for the first to go to their first trial, I say, listen, these things are going to happen. Like, don't worry about it. You're going to check. Eventually, you're going to have a bathroom issue. You're going to check the box. You're going to survive it. It's going to be embarrassing, but people are understanding. The one thing that I did learn is, right at a trial, mark the spot, right? The first time it happened at a trial, I did not, I was just so focused on the embarrassment part that I didn't know to mark it, right? And then everybody's yelling at you, mark the spot. So right. If anybody's listening that has not had a bathroom issue yet, my tip is wear a headband or a hat and use it to mark the spot. Because if you ever see this happen to me, that is the first thing I do, is my headband goes down right where the incident was, so that I can then focus on getting Bradshaw leashed up. And I'm saying Bradshaw because what I learned that day is he seems to be an exercise-induced pooper, and he goes before every run. So at a trial, I very carefully manage that. Every once in a while, we get out of sync, and it doesn't go well. But I know, Ed, when I saw you at the trial, I thought, this is great, right? We're going to do this podcast coming up. you're going to have all this great stuff to say and all these wonderful runs that we had at the trial. And when Bradshaw pooped during that first run that you were watching, I just laughed. And I was like, this is so Bradshaw. Like, this is who we are. It happens.
It does. And truthfully, I remember at least one incident with Dino peeing. I remember Trace has already peed once in the ring. I don't know, pooping, I've never had that issue, but thank goodness. And I know my sister, I believe Belle has peed in the ring. It's something that has just happens. I mean, they're dogs.
You don't want it to happen, but sometimes it does, and you survive, and you just try to manage it better in the future.
Right.
On that trial last 2 weeks ago, I clearly don't have it mastered yet, so maybe I need to work on it a little more myself, but right. Yeah. Oh, and I think that you didn't, I think that on Sunday of that trial, we had another issue with pooping. We just sometimes get out of phase, and as soon as we're out, that's when we have the issue. And I actually caught it on a bag, and everybody was super impressed.
You were pretty. Yeah, I wasn't there the second day. I think that was playbound, and I wasn't there the second day. I only came the one day. Yeah. But, yeah, but, you know, it's these dirty little things that do happen. And for the most part, most people understand at a trial, because if it hasn't happened to you, it probably will eventually. It's just one of those things.
I've been one place that wanted me to sign their wall of shame, which I politely declined. A lot of these indoor places charge a fee. So
right, the indoor places, I know.
I don't want it to happen, right? I don't want to pay a fee. I don't want to mess up somebody else's run because of the smells. But
yeah.
It does happen sometimes, and you survive.
Right. And that, I will admit, the indoor places, that's where I've always been way more concerned. And thankfully, I haven't really been to too many indoor places recently, but I'm saying, when I say indoor, I mean a place like with the turf or like a carpety type thing. If it's a barn, inside a barn, it's really not quite as bad. I mean, it's not great, but it's not horrid. I've always, the indoor places are always a bit concerning to me, especially if they have that, you know. And sometimes, you know, they should. If there's some thing like that, it should be in the premium, warning people off, because they're, you know, then you have the choice. If you know you have issues, you can choose not to go to that location or not, if you think your dog has, you know, any chance of making a mistake.
Yeah. And I have, right, I know the body language, so now if I start to see it, I do pull him from the run, like we just exit. But sometimes, yeah, those weave pulls are a little too much exercise to make it through.
Right. Yeah. But we've been talking about Bradshaw, and he's done really well in a lot of venues. You've gone really far with him, and you've managed it well. But yet, still can happen.
Right. So when I talk about it, it sounds like he does it all the time. That's not the
case. No.
These examples are from, you know, 10 years of agility training with him. So it's not every time, but it does. Once in a while, and folks know that I try, you know, I'm constantly walking in between runs to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. I see you walking the dog ahead of time and all that. Like most people try to do.
And it's easier some places that we have a routine, right? It's something when we get off, it's sometimes when we're somewhere that our routine is like, we haven't figured out what our routine is.
Right. Yes, you haven't figured out the routine for that location that you're maybe is new to you and Bradshaw. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned it earlier on, but I don't remember now. Now, how old is Bradshaw and Rooney? Like you said, they're very close in age.
They are. So Bradshaw is 13 and Rooney is 12 and a half.
Wow. Okay. So you have veteran dogs now there. And yeah. Okay. And definitely, you do have a new dog in the pack too that you're bringing up.
I do, and this is a lot different, right? Since I didn't start agility with the other guys until they were, you know, three and a half. Starting with Franco and knowing that the types of connection skills that I want to build with him as a puppy that will be useful in agility, right? I mean, we're taking class. We're not doing, like, equipment, right? But we're doing all kinds of flat work, working on connections. So this has been a different – this is a completely different journey starting early. I see he has a little – spirit, like, I believe he likes it. His spirit is, you know, really peppy, and he seems to be getting the learning, like, he understands it's his turn, and, you know, that I think he's getting the concept of how this all works, and he seems to really like it. So I'm looking forward to seeing where the journey goes. It's just definitely different starting out with a puppy rather than someone that's a little older.
Right. Yeah. And how old is Franco now?
He is 7 months.
Okay. So he's seven. Okay. So he's still pretty young. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's still, yeah, you're still doing like foundation-y type stuff.
Yeah. Around the cone or in a tunnel or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is, I mean, I'll admit, I mean, you know, my guy Trace, he's almost three now, but definitely, you know, and I got him, I think he was around 7 months when I got him. Maybe he was nine. I can't remember how old he was when I got him. But, like, you know, you know, I did some basic, you know, I went to some basic obedience classes. But then eventually I was doing, like, foundation agility, which was much different than what I had done with Dino. Because, like you, I didn't really start doing agility with Dino until he was, like, maybe... I think it was maybe he was about three when we first started doing mm-hmm. agility. So it's a little different when you get the next dog after you've discovered agility, and now you know you want to do things right from the get-go. My regret, though, has been, you know, I could have done without the pandemic, because I feel like I've been set back a year.
Yeah, definitely adds an extra layer of complexity onto training.
Yeah, but it's good to know. I think things are going to turn around. I don't know. I'll ask you. I know I certainly felt really comfortable going to these outdoor trials that I was just at. So I had no, you know, I felt really good about it. And
yes.
And I know since even the last, you know, pretty much the CDC was changing the guidelines almost in the middle of this last trial. But so now the CDC is saying pretty much outside you should be safe from the.
Yeah, it felt really good to get back out there with everyone and see some folks that I haven't seen in a really long time.
Yeah. And that's the way I felt too. It was just so good to see people that have been on my podcast, just people I see at trials, and seeing their dogs and seeing people have fun. It brings that the joy of agility that you know we all. That's why we go to trials and stuff.
I know. I was thinking when I was running Rooney and his tunnelers run yesterday. That, like, this is priceless. Like, it was just so great, right? It was an early morning run. We were both running hard, and he looked so happy. And I just thought, like, how thankful I was to be out there.
Yes. I agree with you. I enjoyed, even though I was having issues, I'm having starting problems with my guy because... He's losing the attention at the star line, so I got to work on that. But that's my problem. But when he did run, and actually the Tunnelers course, he did get going. I was actually able to start him on the one, and it was really fun to have him running those tunnels.
Yeah, I saw some greatness in there. That was you had some really nice runs.
Yeah, the way I feel about Trace is I think he has potential. It's just, you know, like I said, we've missed a year, so that starting issues, you know, I just got to work on it. I don't want this to be about me, but, you know, after you've been to the trial, you see your problems and gives you something you can work on.
Definitely.
Right. And then looking to the future, are you thinking of maybe going to champs this year for NADAC or not?
I hope so. We right now are on the bubble, so it will depend on if we get to enough more trials and get enough cues, or if they reach the limit of dogs. But I'm really hoping that we do get to go. I'd like another chance to try to actually make the finals rather than fall right below the line.
Right. Yeah.
And what honestly, I just would like to run Bradshaw again at a big event. He's had torn his CCL in both legs, so he's had knee surgery on both legs. Once was during the pandemic, and then it was like the year before. And it was a pretty common thing. Once one leg goes, the other leg has an issue within about a year, and that's exactly what happened. I think the pandemic gave us an extra month or two before the second one went. So now I really approach, you know, every run differently because I wasn't sure, you know, when you're 12 and you tear a ligament, you know, do you come back? So luckily he was able to get surgery and come back, and he's still running really, really well for age 13. So I hope to be able to continue running him as long as he looks like he wants to be there.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's when your dog, it's one of those things. When the dog gets older, at some point you have to realize when is it that time. But as long as they're still running, and they look healthy while they're doing it, and they're enjoying it, then doing it.
Yeah, and what was good to hear was when they went in and looked at his knees, they didn't see any arthritis, so we got the green light to go back and continue having fun. I have retired him from jumping 12, so I think that's one of the things that I really like about NADAC is they give you that chance to drop your height another time.
Right.
So he is right now we're really just focused on CPE and NADAC because they're the two that will allow him to jump 8.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that is one of the nice things about NADAC, that you can, right from the get-go, you can always run skilled, which is, you know, a lower jump height than you want. And then when your dog hits 7, I think it is, you can enter the dog as a veteran from then on, and then you get another height reduction.
Which is just awesome. And then you can always run hoopers, right? Or
right. Yes, you got tunnelers and hoopers and barrelers. Those two are going away. They're going to become something new, but mm-hmm. whatever that is. Yes. Yeah. And that discussion happens too as your dog gets older too. I know my sister with Belle, who's now, and she's not that old, but she's 8, and I mean, frankly, is she 8? Yeah, I think she's 8, 7? Yeah, no, I lost track of how old she is. No, she's 8. She's 8. She's, or will be, and she will be 8 this year. Yes, she'll be 8 this year. So she's technically 7 and able to be a veteran, but she's still jumping her at the skilled height of 8. And that's where it gets tough because it's like she can still jump the 8. But she's, mm-hmm. you know, with beagles, sometimes there's motivations and stuff. And And, like, I know my sister was a little frustrated these last two trials because Belle just missed on some runs by just a little bit of time. So if you go to the veteran level, you get a little bit more time, too. So that's not so much for the dog, but maybe just for the human. Oh, well.
Definitely.
That'll be a discussion she'll be having continuing because I don't know what she's going to do, but... That's, you know, you're allowed to make those personal choices in NADAC, and that's a good thing, I think.
Absolutely. That's what keeps us all coming back.
Right. That's right. Yeah. So, and then are you still, so you're doing, at this point now, you're saying you're pretty much in CPE. And I know some about CPE, but they also have a fairly, I'll call it liberal, I don't know, with jump heights, right? So do they have, like, they have also have a veteran-like level?
Yeah, they have, so they have categories called enthusiast and special. They do have a veteran level, but they also have enthusiast and specialist. And with specialist, that's what allows you to jump two jump heights lower than what you would measure.
Okay, so they had, okay, yeah. And over the years, when I went back when I had Dino, and when CPE came around, and people would often say, oh, you know, you should try CPE. But you actually said this earlier on. I mean, I was always doing NADAC. I had a bunch of points in NADAC. I was like, do I really want to start in another venue? And just, you know, have no points there. So I never tried CPE. I kept thinking about it at times, but I was also often very confused because they had so many levels and so many things. Even back then, I don't know if it's gotten easier or there's more choices now, but it kind of confused me a bit.
Yeah, I had a friend come to her first NADAC trial yesterday. She joined us at the In the Zone trial in Woodstown, New Jersey. And so it was her first time running tunnelers, and she had, you know, a fabulous experience there. Everybody was so welcoming. It was everything that I have described to some of my classmates that don't do NADAC. It was, like, it was her chance to see that my stories were all very accurate, that these are just great people, lots of fun with their dogs. Crazy distance skills that you don't necessarily see elsewhere. So it was really a lot of fun to have that experience yesterday where she was there for the first time. And one of the things that I had said to her is, I was like, all right, I can explain to you really easily how you move up. Get three cues in any particular event, right? I feel like you can't have a simple conversation like that with any of the other organizations, right? There's different requirements, different numbers, different ways events get lumped together. But I was like, this is pretty easy. Like, yeah. So, and she actually got two cues in tunnelers. And I was like, all right, you only need one more.
Right. And you could move up if you want to, or you could stay wherever you are. Yeah. That's the other thing about NADAC.
Definitely. Yeah. I actually did drop Bradshaw back to some open runs, because we don't practice a lot of rear crosses, and I wanted a chance to do some in a trial environment. And what I find is in the elite courses, I get so focused on, like, going for the best time that I was like, all right, I'm going to go back to open and just choose certain places. And in each open course, I'm going to have one rear cross to make sure that we're, like, actually practicing it. So I love that I have the ability to do that, and I don't need to, like, try to keep track of really, like, what, like, it's very clear that's an open cue. I feel like this NADAC is very streamlined in terms of the organization for titles.
Right. Yeah. I it's hard for me to comment on that because, you know, I've been in NADAC all these years. So, but I certainly understand how NADAC works. So I think it is somewhat simple to understand. And I know, as I said, CPE has confused me when I look to their rules, or they did back in the day. So I probably should go look at their rules again and see if it makes more sense now.
there's like a certain table that, like, once you see that table, then you're like, okay, this is what I need to do for this level. But it is, you really do need to look at that. And I, what I took a bunch of pictures of those and then kind of made this book out of them so that I could kind of follow along as time went on.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we've covered a fair amount. Is there anything else that you want to share about your agility story? Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think I should?
Maybe one quick thing. I know since you've had some guests on talking about like different types of events at other organizations. Maybe I'll just mention really quickly, just as folks like are, you know, hearing their friends talk about things they do elsewhere. So UKI has two different games that you don't see elsewhere. One of them is called Power and Speed. And you don't see it run a lot because you need two sets of timers. And it starts off with a section that's all contacts and weaves. And you have to successfully complete that to earn the right to move on to the jumping part of the course. So it's kind of like a little jumper's course doing all of the contact. So it's a little different. And they have another one called Snakes and Ladders, which
You have me curious now about what you just said. So
sure.
is that then you actually run the first section and somebody then tells you to go to the next one, or do you come back and run the second stage later?
No, it's all set at the same time.
All at the same time. Okay.
Yes. So if you successfully do all of the contacts, you just keep going and start with the number one in the jumping sequence.
Okay.
It's like kind of like a mini jumpers course.
But if you had some sort of, if the judge or something called you on something in the first part, then you don't get to go to the second stage.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Interesting.
So kind of an interesting one. Yeah. Like a little fast jumpers course at the end. That's kind of fun. And then they have another unique one called Snakes and Ladders. And that's where all the contacts and weaves you do in one direction. So there is no numbered course. You make up your own course. But tunnels are kind of like the chute in Chutes and Ladders. So, right, you come one direction through all the tunnels and you go the other direction through all the contacts. So it's a little one of those strategy games where you need to kind of come up with a plan and successfully complete everything to get, or nearly everything that's set to get enough points or to get enough credit to qualify. So just some different, maybe you've been kind of highlighting some of the differences between the different organizations, and those two are kind of unique games to UKI.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. That's one thing, because I have not, like, I haven't really gone to other trials of other organizations. And I occasionally, AKC is sometimes on TV. So I have some sense of what they have, but, it's interesting, you know, and I know CPE has a lot of different games too, which has always confused me a bit too. They have all they like card games and stuff like colors and whatever. but yeah, I don't understand all the games and all the other events in the other organizations, right? And do you
definitely have some different roles?
Yeah, but have you? I know from your initial story, it sounded like you were mostly interested in agility. Have you done anything outside of agility with the dogs? Like, you know, any of the other type things like barn hunt or whatever, you know?
We have done, we actually were volunteering with a search and rescue team.
Oh,
so
cool.
We did a lot of tracking lost humans in the woods.
Nice.
Yeah, so we were working with the Alpha Canine Search and Rescue for a few years. There was a class through the same place I was training through agility. We started doing it. My husband likes being outdoors, so he is much more willing to spend time doing that than he typically doesn't come to the agility trials with me unless we're RVing. And then, of course, he likes to come. It's like a mini vacation.
Right.
But
yes.
Search and rescue, right? He would handle Bradshaw, and I would handle Rooney. So we kind of, it was kind of a together event, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We haven't done it much recently, right? Pandemic and some changes have kind of slowed some of that down. But we've had a really great time doing that. And it's funny because in that, Rooney is the rock star. And Bradshaw is doing it, but he's doing it because he thinks he's going to get a treat at the end of it, right? Rooney, it's about the journey. You see his nose down. You see his passion for, you know, searching. And Bradshaw's like, all right, let me get to this treat at the end of this because I will do anything for food.
Okay. All right. That, yeah, it's interesting, the motivation, the different motivation. Yeah. Yeah.
I used to joke that if he ever went out on a real call, and he found someone and they weren't alive and unable to give him a treat, that would be it. He would be done. He would not do this anymore. He would realize that this is not what this is about, and that would be it. So we used to laugh about that, thinking that just what his personality is and his motivation, that it's really all about that. Whereas Rooney, he would, you know, he would go really far looking and wouldn't give up.
Right. Okay. and since you mentioned it, I'm always interested in RVs, and since you happen to be a person who has an RV and does agility, I'll ask, what kind of RV do you have? Is it a mobile home or is it a trailer? Or
so that's actually some influence from NADAC for us, right? So we start going to these trials and see friends that have them, and next thing you know, Bradshaw convinces us to buy one. And so we have it's a Class A. It's a Forest River 30DS. So we like to take it down to Woodstown and all over the place. The first couple times we went down to the UKI US Open, we actually rented an RV to try it out.
Oh, okay.
So we always thought that when we retired, we probably would be RVers. Didn't realize in the meantime before then we would come up with this hobby where owning an RV made a lot of sense and made travel with the dog really easy.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's good. And it does. That's the RV does for some people, the RV really makes, adds a certain, you know, comfort and makes agility even better. And then other people are fine with, you know, going to hotels or B&Bs or whatever. It's to each their own. And I know for me, I just have a small pop-up camper. But the thought of moving up to something, I don't know what something is yet, but something a little bit better is always in the back of the mind.
Definitely. I remember when we were at Woodstown and thinking about getting an RV, and everyone was just so welcoming, like, come check ours out, like, look at the layout, like, you know, sharing information on their journey to buying, and just really lucky that we were able to get one as well. And we're really, really enjoying using it.
Right.
We've gone kind of all over with it.
Okay. Very good. All right.
And hopefully we'll take it out to Champs.
Yes, yes. Maybe you'll give it a ride out to Springfield, Ohio this year. Yes.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, that would be nice, and I hope to see you. Hope to see you down the road at least a local trial or out there maybe. So
I hope so too.
So I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast, and I'll wish you well, and many cues to come.
Looking forward to more fun with the dogs. Every run is special.
Okay. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Ed. Really appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
And I'm back with a quick final. As always, I thank my listeners. I thank you for subscribing and following and helping me to grow the podcast by mentioning it to your friends or sharing the podcasts on social media. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Heather. I'll also remind you that you can send feedback to me at offcourse@optimum.net. If you are trialing either VTs or actual trials, and I must say, I have gone to a few recent trials now. Trials, it's great being back at real trials. So I wish you happy trialing.